So it's the 16th of July 2013, and my name's Ollie Taylor, and I'm here at Gloucestershire Archives with Judith Chamberlain, who is a former Fielding & Platt employee. She was at the company from 62 as a private secretary, and Judith has come in today to talk to us about her experiences of working for the company for those years. And it will be a fantastic contribution to the Fielding & Platt Community Archive project. So first of all, Judith, could I just ask you to introduce yourself with your name, when you were born, the years that you worked for the company, and the job that you did for the company, please?
Well, I was born in 1944. My maiden name, Matthias. So I was always known as Miss Matthias. I started off working in the sales department for their sales manager, Garfield James. I was only there for about a year before I moved to the director's corridor and worked for the director and general manager, Mr. Whittaker. And from then on, I progressed through their group personnel director, Mark Phillips, and occasionally, when his secretary was away, Mr. Fielding.
Wow, all these names that I've heard and people that you knew personally. I look forward to talking to you about those people in the course of this interview. That would be fantastic. But first of all, can I ask, how was it that you came to work at Fielding & Platt, Judith?
Well, I moved from my training course at Gloucester Technical College to work for the personnel manager of the Bon Marché. And after a year there, my father said, "It's time you progressed, Judith," and he saw the advert in the paper and got me to apply. I wasn't that impressed to start with because the department store was great fun, especially at Christmas time and things like that. I really enjoyed it. So to work for a company of heavy engineers, heavy engineering was pretty boring. But very soon I thoroughly enjoyed it. And although I moved on after I married and worked in other places, Fielding & Platt was the best job I ever had, with some of the nicest people I've ever met. I loved it.
Do you remember going for the job interview? And if so, who was it that interviewed you? And what was the interview like?
Oh, quite terrifying. Yes, I went straight to my prospective boss's office, Garfield James. He was very charming, but then he gave me the dreaded shorthand test. I was pretty good at shorthand. I'd got really high speeds, but even so, when you do it in test circumstances. And then I had to go and type it back and present it to him. Presumably he was satisfied because he employed me. And that was that. Yes, I started off with him.
Do you remember what the test was? Do you remember what you had to write in shorthand, what he gave you?
It was a letter, presumably a fictional letter, but he had used engineering terminology. And I do clearly remember having to write in shorthand a multiplicity of H3 pumps. And having come straight from a department store, where all you're worried about is household linen and perfume and cosmetics, it was a pretty different language. But I soon got to know it.
A multiplicity of H3 pumps. I imagine that doesn't come up very often when you're at shorthand school.
No, not ever. Not ever, no. But you get used to it, all the terms for the various engineering things they did. Yeah.
And did they let you know there and then that you'd been successful and that you were given the job?
Yes, I believe he did. Yes, he did. So I had to go straight back and hand my notice in, and I think it was the usual 3 weeks notice.
And was that the only area of the works that you saw when you first went to Fielding & Platt? You were led through the office entrance, presumably. You didn't see any of the rest of the works?
No. I almost never saw the rest of the works. Let me see, how old was I when I went there? 17? You just don't go into the works when you're a 17-year-old secretary. And there's other no-go areas. You don't go very close to the drawing office. I mean, Perhaps some girls were braver than me, but no, the cat calls and whistles and I stayed out of the works. Occasionally you had to brave it. We certainly never got anything like a conducted tour. It was just, no, the boss would interview you, do your test, and that's it. And most of my little world was in the sales department. It was a corridor on its own. I think you went up the steps. The drawing office was on one side. And then there was a whole line of offices of each of the engineers. Do you want their names?
That'd be fantastic, yeah.
Well, we had Ivan Perryman and Morgan Walton in one office. Bob Wilson in another. Clarence Hack, Martin Rich. Those were all the ones that were working when I was there. Then there was an office for the clerk, which I shared when I began to work there. I wasn't too happy about that, but, you didn't complain. It was a bit like a filing cabinet, the entire office just stacked with these metal files. I was luckier than the three engineer secretaries because they just had a teensy cupboard. It was barely 10 foot square for three girls to work in. There were windows along the one edge and a tall brick wall about 20 foot opposite, and that's all we saw except for the railway line which ran between. So they weren't attractive offices.
How were they decorated?
Very badly, so badly that the shorthand typist office actually had holes and cracks near the ceiling and gaps where the air came through. And I'm afraid I was instrumental in encouraging us all to decorated ourselves by putting little tissue streamers next to the drafts, and I went to Woolworths and bought a loofah, a bath loofah, and cut it to shape like a bracket fungus and stuck it up there just to draw everybody's attention to the appalling state of decoration in the hope that somebody would take pity on us and decorate our offices.
Did that ever happen?
No. No, they were amused but told us to take them down, and we stuck with the leaks and the drafts.
And so was it decorated a bit like this office in Magnolia, or was it a different shade?
Oh, I don't remember too clearly, but I think it was much darker. More like this old school bottle green, and perhaps Magnolia from the upper half. And it hadn't been decorated for a very long time. And you couldn't see much of the walls anyway, stacked with filing cabinets.
And what would have been in these filing cabinets? Was it correspondence or, files on particular sales contracts?
Absolutely everything. When you think of today as aiming towards a paperless society, this was as different as you could be. Yes, it was correspondence and orders and inquiries. Internal memos. My, were there internal memos. And every internal memo you sent seemed to have to go to about six other people apart from the relevant one. Everything was filed perhaps two or three times. And in addition to that, a copy went down to the filing office on the floor below. When we had a quote in, it was an inquiry. We had to reply on sheets of paper which were like in blocks of six or seven, each one a different colour. And each colour went to a different office or a different filing system. The inquiry itself was in a hard cover. I think it might have been green. When on the magic day it got turned into an order, it was moved from its green hard file to a red hard file, and more copies sent out everywhere. So, yes, there was paperwork. Ever such a lot of a shorthand typist's time was spent filing.
And do you remember which colour corresponded to which department of this kind of sheet?
No, can't go that far. No.
But they all went all over the works into different files,
yes.
And that way they could keep track of each
yes.
department could keep track of what the status of an inquiry or an order was.
Yes. And I do remember too when an inquiry came in and we had to quote. Obviously, different engineers were responsible for different areas, different types of equipment. And he and his short end typists were the ones that did all the work on it. But when there was a really big order, everybody mucked in, even if it was overtime, including me as the manager's secretary. We would stay as late as it took to get this inquiry all typed up, or quotation we called it then, yes. I haven't got many details still in my head, but I do remember a vast order coming in from a company called Segedur. I think I've seen that in your displays in the exhibition. And yeah, that was in my time. So everybody was working on that to get it all typed out and out on time.
Do you remember the day that that inquiry came in?
Not specifically, but you always remember great joy when something like that happens. Yeah.
When did it kind of become apparent that this was a big order, this was a significant inquiry?
I really don't remember the details because, as I said, the principal person in charge was the engineer, and the rest of us were just mucking in. But I think right from day one, we knew it was huge.
And so take me through that process of the inquiry coming in, and then follow that through to it becoming an order, and then, you know, what would the nature of your work have been throughout the whole process of that Segedur order?
Well, again, you need to speak to one of the shorthand typists for that. As the manager's secretary, I was more sort of, he was overseeing things, cracking the whip for them. But, yeah, the order would come in. Clearly, my boss, the manager, would be in charge of seeing who looked after it. And then it would be site visits and possibly people from the company coming to visit us. And then just masses of work on the quotations and perhaps a second quotation and more visits. And then finally, if you were lucky, you'd get the order. Big celebrations. After that, we heard very little about it. It all then just got passed straight on to the works.
How did you celebrate the Segedur?
I don't remember being included in their celebrations. The engineers possibly did, but I don't think that applied to the shorthand typists, the secretaries.
So that was a significant order, and as we've talked about in the display, the Segedur press is featured, and that press was later used to help build Concord. I'd like to go back to your very early experiences at the company, coming to work for the company on your first day. How did you feel when you first started your job proper?
Oh, terrified and inadequate. Yes, but it did go very well, and everybody was so kind. But I do remember feeling as if I can't do this job, at least I'm going to look as if I can do it. And I suppose that added to the appearance of being a little aloof and apart, if you know what I mean. But as the months, weeks, I suppose, went by, I got into it. It was the language more than anything. Hydraulic presses, extrusion presses, things like that. Weird terminology I'd never come across. And also continually typing something about which you knew absolutely nothing. When you're in a personnel department, you know, it's all common sense. But heavy engineering is a totally foreign language, so it takes a while to get into that. But it happened sooner than I thought, and yeah, I did enjoy it.
So there was never any induction where certain types of press were explained to you at all?
No, you are joking. It was all a completely foreign language. If you wanted to ask, if they had time, they would explain briefly. I mean, I know we worked on, what do they call them? The scrap metal balers. Big into scrap metal balers. And there was a shear, which I can't remember its name of.
Wasn't the Iron Shark, was it?
Yes, I haven't thought of that for years. Yes, the Iron Shark shear. And we did a lot of work for a company in South Wales, Bird Brothers, Tommy Bird. That was probably the balers again, scrap metal. But no, unless you asked, you didn't get explained anything. No. One thing that was part of looking for orders during my time in the sales department, I was lucky enough to be taken on the London International Engineering Exhibition. It was held for 2 weeks at Earl's Court. And the engineers went to sort of 2 days at a time. And they took me, because I was able to speak a bit of French and German, and a couple of other secretaries. I think we were there principally to make tea and offer drinks to the people. But it was huge fun, just for 2 weeks, to do something totally different in London. In the evenings, we got taken out by the engineers. I don't know what their expense accounts were. But we went to places I'd never heard of. As a very sheltered little girl brought up in Gloucester, we went to the Pigalle, we went to the Trocadero, we went to a couple of theatres. So it was just amazing for a couple of weeks. Whether or not they got any business out of it, I'm not certain. But that was the idea.
Do you remember when roughly this would have been? And can you just describe what this show was like for us, please?
It was held at Earl's Court, which looks... It was pretty similar then, as it is if you were to go now to the motor show. But yes, there were just huge company stands all the way over with their various engineering products. That's about all I can say. Yes.
Do you remember having occasion to wander around these stands and see the types of products that were on display?
No, we were needed on the spot to make tea, to talk to people if they had somebody with a language, you know, French or German. I remember we stayed at the Regent Palace Hotel. I remember the long tube journeys in the morning to get there and back. I remember wanted one evening off to go out with my boyfriend who was at London University. This caused much horror. They weren't sure they could trust this strange man with their secretary. He pretty well had to be vetted before I was allowed out with him. But that was just one night. Yeah.
And was there much interest in Fieldings at that show? Do you remember talking to a number of people?
Yes. I honestly can't say who. I was in a complete daze, I expect, but it was very busy, constantly visited. Yes. Yes, it was.
And what sort of products were Fieldings exhibiting, I suppose, at that fair?
I doubt if they had much on show, because everything we did was huge. It was mainly literature and photographs, and the engineers just being there to explain it, and also records of work they'd done in the past, photographs of previous installations.
Did they were probably dressed quite smartly. Was there such a thing as a Fielding and Platt blazer that they wore, or were they just there in suit and tie? Was there anything to identify the Fielding and Platt stand, as it were, as Fielding and Platt?
Not really, no. I mean, obviously the logo was big, but no, the men always dressed. In those days, men always dressed smartly in suits, all the time. So no, there was no difference there.
And what was the name of the show?
London International Engineering Exhibition, Earl's Court.
And that would have been sometime between 62 and 69.
Oh, early on. I think it was while I was still with the sales department. So, yeah, 61, 2, 3, in that time.
Sorry, Judith, I cut you off. You were about to say something before I asked you the name of the show again.
Probably couldn't say that's about it on the end. I really, really can't remember any more on that one.
It's wonderful that you can remember that, though, because no one's mentioned any such thing before, so it's fantastic that you remember that in particular.
No deep impression at that age, I suppose, yes.
And that was... You would never have experienced such opportunities at Bon Marché, for instance.
Absolutely not. No.